The following program is suitable for all ages.
The phone. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor in the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffone, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our ass whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the ass and get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. I'm playing right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffone 55. The John Buffone Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Buffone 55, a fast-paced approach at breaking down the Chicago Bears. I'm your host, John Buffone. I'm coming to you live Tuesday night, December 3rd, over our Bears Barroom Radio Network, Mixler.com channel. Every week, we take an in-depth look at the Bears' upcoming opponent, and here to help us better understand the Dallas Cowboys this week is RJ Ochoa from SB Nation's Blog and the Boys. RJ is going to join us in just a bit, but first, I want to welcome my producer and moderator, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, how was your Thanksgiving? Did the Bears' performance help or hurt the festivities at your house?
Well, considering I spent half of my Thanksgiving surrounded by Lions fans, I'm certainly thankful that the Bears won. But most importantly, I think I'm thankful that for at least one game, the Bears seem to have an offense. John, is that what offense looks like? Because I could get used to that.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it in so long that I can't really put my finger on it. I remember tweeting, though, there were some bad parts of that game. I remember tweeting how happy I was to have distractions around me. I was around like 40 family members while the game was on. I'm just like, thank God I have plenty of distractions so I don't have to watch this. But they turned it around. They pulled it out. Bears get a victory. Everyone is happy.
And, I mean, look at Mitch Trubisky leading back from a 10-point deficit. I mean, I know you're playing the Lions, but, I mean, it's nice to see. I'll take anything optimistic at this point.
Defeat the mighty, mighty Detroit Lions, yes.
Although I certainly could have done without the two David Blau touchdowns because I was just – my family was applauding.
We will talk about David Blau later.
So, John, before we bring our guest in, I want to tell our listeners how our show works. So – we begin and end the show with five questions that you have 55 seconds to respond to. That's John's way of dedicating Buffone 55 to Doug Buffone, his uncle, who played 15 seasons for the Chicago Bears and wore number 55. So, John, let's get the first five in the book, and then we'll bring in your guest.
Sounds good.
So, John, the opening drive against the Lions began with the 57-yard kick return by Cordarrelle Patterson that set the offense up at the 50. Trubisky and his guys did the rest. This is a key to the Bears finding success as a team. Short fields for the offense that are set up by special teams or defensive play. It was the formula last year, and we finally saw it this year. Can the Bears start to replicate that chemical reaction again? The clock starts now.
Well, they can, but will they? I don't know. Look, the return game was working. The offense took advantage of some of the short fields, but I've said this before. This is exactly what has to happen for the Bears to be able to win ball games. Yeah, the offense played better, but there were still some concerning things. I'm not trying to be a killjoy here. I was happy the Bears won, and there were some positives, but this is the same thing I said last week. They were able to eke out a win against a bottom-level team. They did it against the Giants, and they were able to beat the Lions by 4, courtesy of a really well-orchestrated drive late in the game, which we will get to in a little bit. But for this last stretch of games, the defense absolutely is going to have to set things up for the offense. And the defense is about to get a big boost in a couple weeks when Akeem Hicks returns. He's back in practice now. He can't really technically play until the Packers game in 2 weeks. But if the Bears have any shot at this Hail Mary of a playoff chance, Hicks is going to play a pivotal role in that, as is Cordarrelle Patterson and Tariq Cohen on the return game.
How many times have we seen the Bears lose the field position battle? I mean, their average starting field position, it's deep in their own territory, even on the first drive, whether it's because Tariq Cohen letting the punt roll deep in their territory or penalties backing them up. So, like, Patterson's ability to kind of give them that breathing room, I feel like it gave the offense some breathing room and allowed them to score on an opening possession for just a second time this season. So, I mean, I'd love to see more of that, but the offense is definitely going to need some help from the special teams and defense to keep that going.
Absolutely have to have that, especially coming up against formidable opponents like Dallas, Kansas City, Green Bay, the works. They need that.
And they have, actually, I think it's the toughest strength of schedule these final four games. So
no, that's
going to be rough. So the Bears' final touchdown drive against the Lions, the game-winning drive, was a thing of beauty. So can you tell us the things that impressed you most out of that nine-play, 90-yard drive? 55 seconds, go.
Well, it looked like an actual offense, didn't it? You know what I liked? They were picking up chunks of yards rather than dropping back and getting 2 to 3 yards. I know some of the passes were on the shorter side, but Montgomery was able to pick up 10 yards right off the bat. And then Anthony Miller was absolutely huge on that drive, picking up plays of 11, 35, 32 yards. When the Bears were up against it and needed to put together a scoring drive, we didn't see them crap their pants, which is a nice thing to see. They rose to the occasion. It's something that you can maybe carry over into the next week. At least I hope that it is. It's almost like when they go out there and just let Trubisky sling it and not try to micromanage every little movement because there isn't time. That seems to be when the offense can thrive. I feel like people have been saying this for the last 10 weeks, but maybe this is the week they finally just say, screw it. Go play some sandlot ball. I mean, seriously, what has this meticulous, genius offense been able to do all year? Jack squat. So maybe it's time to try something else.
And considering that the Bears are near the bottom of the league in third down conversions, the fact that, you know, seeing Trubisky and the Bears being able to get two clutch third down conversions, you know, with the deep ball, no less. I mean, that's something that I could get used to. Although, I mean, I'm certainly not going to hold my breath, you know, with these final four games.
It was refreshing, but I'm going to be very cautiously, I won't even call it optimistic. I'm just going to be cautious.
And speaking of refreshing, Jesper Horsted made an over-the-helmet 18-yard touchdown catch on Thanksgiving that could serve as an appetizer to a good career with the Bears. So what have you seen from Horsted, and what are the prospects that he can become what Trey Burton was supposed to be for the Bears? 55, 54, 53, go John.
Well, he has one of the better names on the team, Jesper, and he's a good story. He's an Ivy League kid out of Princeton where he was a huge contributor, set a bunch of records there. He's a really good athlete, hell of a baseball player too, apparently. He's not huge. He's not physically imposing. He's 6'3", just 237 pounds, but he has really good hands, and I'm interested to see him play a little bit more. He's only 22, so you would love to see a guy like that continue to progress. And honestly, this is a great situation for Jesper right now. Trey Burton is done for the season. Adam Shaheen is probably done for the season for entirely different reasons. There has been such a void at the tight end position all year. This is a great opportunity for a young guy to come in and try to impress the coaches. There is absolutely nothing guaranteed at the tight end position for this year or even next year. So Jesper really has the chance of a lifetime to catch on with an NFL franchise. This is a good opportunity for the young guy to prove himself.
I mean, it only took 13 weeks, but I mean, we got some solid production from our tight ends, or Horsted in this case. He only has 2 passes in his career, but he's already shown more progress than Burton or Shaheen this season.
Jesper, I just like to say it, I'll be honest.
Jesper. So the Bears reconfigured their offensive line 4 games ago, and they have won 3 out of those last 4 games. So now it's true the competition hasn't been the strongest, but there has been a difference in play. What have you seen in the line play since Cody Whitehair moved back to center and James Daniels back to left guard? John, get into your 3-point stance, and when I say go, fire out and give me your response. Go.
Well, you're absolutely right. The competition has not been the strongest. But when the change happened about 3-4 weeks ago, I was really surprised. And it's possible that Daniels and Whitehair were surprised as well. We saw some off-target snaps from Whitehair early on, but they're working through that. But this was the combo that worked last year, and maybe having another 2 games under their belts against not the best competition allowed them to kind of get comfortable again in those positions. We did see Mitch get a little more time to throw the ball throughout the game. Look, they had to do something. I didn't think they would. I thought they would stubbornly stick to their guns and let this offensive line implode on itself. But now there's some potential that the line could maybe sort of possibly have a chance at being average to finish the year. Can you feel the confidence just radiating off of me right now? But in the coming weeks, we'll truly see if this change actually had an effect, or this was just a result of playing the Giants and Lions that have a combined 5 wins this year.
Yeah, the competition is certainly a factor there, but you know, the consistency on the offensive line is incredibly important. And I feel like, you know, last season, like, why fix, you know, what wasn't broken in the first place? You know, I know they want to get James Daniels in there at center, but, you know, Cody Whitehair has a good relationship with Trubisky, and, like, he seems more comfortable back there. The communication, it seems more, just more smooth and more effective. But, you know, obviously, the real test is going to come in these final 4 games. They're playing 3 teams that have won at least 8 games. So, you know, and especially that right side of that line is vulnerable with Coward and Lucas over there.
Yeah, I don't know what's in store for this line beyond 2019. I think right now they're just trying to match together the best combination so that they can not be as leaky as they were earlier in the season. But I can't see this line staying as it is going into next year.
Definitely not. So, John, I wrote for BearsWire.com that it appears head coach Matt Nagy is losing faith in place kicker Eddie Pinheiro. Against the Lions on 4th and 6, Nagy elected to bypass a 50-yard field goal attempt, indoors, mind you, and the coach put his trust into his struggling offense. Pinheiro has gone 6 of 10 on field goals since week 8. You think the coach was right to lead the offense on 4th and 6, or would you would have preferred seeing Eddie try the 50-yarder? 55 seconds, and then welcome RJ to the show.
See, this is another thing I really don't understand. Your kicker is struggling. You clearly have lost confidence in him. You refuse to let him kick, and you feel more comfortable going for it on 4th and 6, but you still don't bring in any kickers to try out. The reason given for not letting Pinheiro kick was that the offense wanted to stay aggressive. But if you ask me, this was a total move of distrust in your kicker. So eventually, guess what? You're going to need your kicker to make a 45 or 50-yard field goal to win a game. And apparently, you're comfortable sending out a guy you aren't comfortable with. Now, I get the flip side. Who are you going to sign off the streets that's going to be any better? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm a kicking expert or a sports psychologist, but I believe that kickers get hot and they go cold. When they're in their rhythm and the confidence is high, sometimes they can be automatic. When things start slipping, the wheels can fall off real quick, and sometimes it's irreparable. So maybe you should hold tryouts and see if there is a guy that comes in with a little swagger and can make some kicks and potentially catch fire, because are we really sure that Eddie Pinheiro is the kicker for the Bears in 2020? If not, maybe see what else is out there. Okay, I now welcome to the show RJ Ochoa from SB Nation's blogging, The Boys. Hey, RJ, thanks for being on the show tonight. How you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Happy post-Thanksgiving to you. Happy holiday season. Happy December. It's always a fun time in the NFL when games are this meaningful.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's still somewhat meaningful for the Bears, so we're still excited. Obviously, very meaningful for the Cowboys. I want to begin to look at this Cowboys team. I want to start with the head coach. Michael Sizemore, at your website, recently wrote, 9 seasons of Jason Garrett and the Cowboys have fielded several potentially great teams but sit with no tangible success to speak of. What's the lowdown on Garrett? What does he do well as a head coach? But what also does he do that puts him in danger of losing his job?
Well, you know, Jason Garrett's had a fascinating tenure and almost a decade as the head coach of the Cowboys. I think everybody remembers those first 3 seasons. They went 8-8 in each of them, and in every single one, they had a Week 17 win and in-game against each one of their division rivals. They lost to the Giants, who won the Super Bowl. They lost to the Redskins in RG3's rookie year, and they lost to the Eagles in the first iteration of Nick Foles. And, you know, in 2014, Jason Garrett really turned it around. They went 12-4. That was the year they really committed to the run when DeMarco Murray left the NFL in rushing. And then in 2015, Tony Romo broke his collarbone and everything was kind of terrible. And then obviously since then, it's been the Dak and Zeke era. And, you know, in terms of what Jason Garrett does well, I mean, he's always been regarded as somebody who, as cliche as it sounds, his team fights for. You know, his team never gives up on him. They never quit. You know, this is a team that has only played in a handful of, you know, meaningless games where they were mathematically eliminated from playoff contention. Majority of them were that 2015 year where Romo was hurt. But, you know, that's what makes where they're at so interesting, because earlier this season, after the Cowboys lost to the Jets, they hosted the Eagles on Sunday Night Football, and it really felt like the wheels were going to fall off. But they came out and had a huge 37-10 win, and that kind of justified that narrative. But this past week against the Bills on Thanksgiving, it was okay. You know, everybody's looking like they might quit. This is when Garrett's guys typically bounce back. And for them to not just lose but get embarrassed, you know, in front of the whole world on Thanksgiving was kind of an indictment against him. And he's, you know, he's a bit robotic in nature. He always takes things day by day. The Cowboys have gone Thursday to Thursday now for a few years in a row. So today was Friday in his world, as he likes to kind of compartmentalize things. But, it's been a lot of, ifs, ands, buts, and coulds with Jason Garrett. And unfortunately, the Cowboys, they've come a few steps shy of their goal every time he's been in charge.
Now, Garrett faced a lot of questions at Monday's presser about preparing for the cold weather in Chicago. Is that really a thing with the Cowboys? How do they handle cold weather? Is this something that gets blown up in the media, or does it actually have an effect on the team?
It's a really funny and sore subject, I think, these days, because I think you're right. I think, all respect to Lamar Jackson, who's probably going to be this season's MVP, but got a lot of credit last week, right, for, practicing with a wet ball, and you kind of think, this happens. This is pretty normal in today's NFL. Well, when the Cowboys went to New England a couple of weeks ago, forecast was 100% chance of rain. It was going to be very cold. And for whatever reason, the Cowboys did not prepare for the cold. And it was something that really kind of altered that game. Sean Lee, who played at Penn State, is a pretty tough dude, had to put on sleeves in the second half. Dak Prescott had to put on a glove in the second half on his throwing hand. He hadn't practiced with it all week. And so while I agree with your assessment that generally it is something that maybe the media sort of overblows when it is a bit gustier and colder, the fact that the Cowboys were so underprepared for a game in frigid conditions, I think, calls into question their ability to prepare for it. And I think, to the factor of how they play when it's cold, I think everybody remembers that Monday night game in Chicago 6 years ago. Jason Garrett talked about that, this week too, and how it was so cold. He remembers, drinking some chicken broth at halftime. So the cold can definitely affect them. Dak and Zeke in their rookie season lost. Their second loss of the season was in New York against the Giants. It was a cold night. I wouldn't say that it totally changes who they are, but it's definitely a factor.
Talk to RJ Cho from SB Nation's Blogging the Boys. RJ, the Dallas Morning News reported that Dak Prescott had some strong words regarding the team's approach. Among the things he said was, quote, "Talk is cheap, right? In a moment like this, hell with the talking. I'm going to do more. I'm going to work harder," end quote. Is Prescott upset with the team's mental approach, or is that just general frustration about the team being 6-6?
Dak is one of the strongest, if not the strongest, leaders on the team. And I think, the Cowboys do such a great job generally of internalizing whatever's being said about them and kind of, putting their backs against a wall and banding together as one group. After they lost to the Bills on Thanksgiving, there was shouting coming from the locker room as the Cowboys were entering it. It was, later revealed that it was Michael Bennett, who's one of the newer members of the Cowboys, and that message was just about, sticking together and fighting through things and, every sort of different act of varsity blues. But to me, that's just Dak kind of speaking up for his guys and saying, what we do matters, and what everybody else says really kind of brushes off our shoulders.
Sticking with Dak, with four games to go in this season, Prescott has already tied his career high for touchdown passes and needs only 97 yards passing to exceed his career high of 3,885. Can you evaluate Prescott's play on the field? Because statistically, he's having his best season. It's not translating into a dominant record, however. Can you talk about the dynamic of Dak's performance versus the overall record?
Well, Dak is at the moment the NFL's leading passer, which is something that I think would have shocked a lot of Cowboys fans if you told them that would be the case back in September. He's being coached to be a lot more aggressive. Everybody's well aware of Kellen Moore and sort of the difference in approach he's made in terms of how the Cowboys have handled their offense. They're throwing more just in terms of volume. John Kitna doesn't get, I think, enough credit for this. Obviously, he's been around the NFL as well. He's the team's quarterbacks coach, and everybody saw the Dak dance and stuff, on Sunday Night Football. And that's what John Kitten has sort of been really, really, really implementing. I know Tom House is the guy that kind of got Dak on that wavelength, but John Kitten has been all about fundamentals. And Dak has really focused on, how his hips move, where he plants his feet, where his weight is. And so he really took a huge approach in that over the offseason. And I think we're seeing the results translate. I think a lot of it is obviously that Amari Cooper has, at least early on, hasn't had that great of a run. These last couple of games been such a great aerial weapon for Dak Prescott. And the emergence of Michael Gallup as, a number two receiver for the Cowboys, and the addition of Randall Cobb. They've had a lot of pieces. And you can, I think, sort of surmise that some of what Dak has done has been in garbage time, if you want to call it that. But ultimately, the Cowboys, if you think about it, they fell down 31-3 to the Green Bay Packers. They fell down 21-3 to the New York Jets. I mean, they were in a lot of positions where they had to throw a lot, and that's kind of, I think, helped Dak pile up a lot of statistics.
One of Dak's safety blankets, Ezekiel Elliott. He's appearing to be about as good as he's ever been. Is it safe to say that he hasn't lost a step since being paid? He's still going to be the bell cow guy for years to come?
You know, I think if you asked an average Cowboys fan, they'd express a lot of frustration with Zeke. It's been an interesting, I think, dichotomy so far this season because you do seemingly have Dak Prescott playing so well, and the Cowboys really want to focus on the run. And while Zeke has certainly been a special player for such a long time, you know, I think the wave of the NFL is to pass, and people want to see that. Zeke really, I think, finally sort of found himself, had a big explosive run for the first time in a while last Thursday against the Bills. But while Zeke, I think, you know, you look at it, he's certainly in the top 10 in rushers, and that's, you know, if that's a bad year for him, I think they'll take that all day long. While I certainly believe that Zeke Elliott is one of the best running backs in the NFL, his identity within the team has been different. You know, we really haven't gotten a true sort of classic Zeke game so far this season, and I think that's a lot of the reason why the Cowboys haven't had as much success in the win-loss column.
Talking to RJ Ochoa from SB Nation's blog and the boys. RJ, you talked about Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, Randall Cobb. Obviously, Jason Witten comes back to try to shore up the tight end position. Based on the statistics this year and based on some of the production, it seems like there's very little wrong with this offensive unit. Is there anything that the team doesn't do well offensively? Is there any kind of dent in the armor?
Well, you know, I think it's the flaws they have, if you want to call them flaws, are in disposition. You know, you mentioned Jason Witten, for example. I mean, you know, the Cowboys have a young, promising tight end on their roster, and Blake Jarwin, that people want to see more of. He's more athletic than Jason Witten. He's faster. You know, he's seemingly more aggressive out in open space. And so it's things like that. And I think, you know, perhaps the biggest Achilles heel with their offense overall is that they generally start very slow. I mentioned the hole they were in against Green Bay and against the Jets. They fell down 14-0 against the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, in spite of all that, their offense is so efficient that they have found ways to come back. But, you know, the Cowboys' average starting field position is their own 23-yard line, which is, you know, as you can deduce, a weaker starting field position than if you were to just take a touchback on every kickoff. And a lot of that is due to special teams flaws and due to an inability to get turnovers on offense. I mean, the Cowboys have 4 interceptions so far this season. And while those aren't necessarily flaws with the offense particularly, they do affect what the offense is able to do. Their offense is very good, but they're always put in positions where they have to drive the length of the field. And, you know, at a certain point that becomes difficult, you know, series in and series out.
Now, when people bring up offensive lines in the NFL and you bring up the top offensive lines in the NFL, people seem to automatically gravitate towards the Cowboys. You see the team every week. Has the Cowboys' offensive line lived up to the reputation they've got?
You know, I think they're certainly still among the best in the NFL, but I would definitely say this is a down year for them and their standards. You know, the Cowboys re-signed Lyle Collins, who's their right tackle, to a contract extension before the season began, and he's been the best offensive lineman on the team. You know, they're just at a stage now where, you know, Tyron Smith is always dealing with something. And that's generally the case, I think, for most NFL players. Travis Frederick coming back from his autoimmune disorder has been an incredible story and has played well, I think, but he hasn't been his, you know, most dominant self. Zach Martin has been dealing with a couple of bumps and bruises and things along the way. And he's been, you know, for these guys and how good they've been, you know, good is a bit of a disappointment. Connor Williams, I think, has been, you know, better in year two. The Cowboys drafted him out of the University of Texas a season ago. He's on injured reserve with a torn ACL. And so the Cowboys now have a really weak spot at left guard. They'll be starting Xavier Suafilo, who they did start for 5 games last season. They went undefeated in those. But overall, I think, you know, this offensive line has been classic Coke for so long, and this season's a little bit Diet Coke, Coke Zero sort of thing.
Still delicious, nonetheless. Talking to RJ Ochoa from SB Nation's blog and the boys. Let's switch sides of the ball, RJ. On the defensive side, Robert Quinn and DeMarcus Lawrence have 14.5 sacks between them. Who else is providing some pressure on the quarterback right now? And is there any update on Michael Bennett? I hear that he might be a little banged up.
Well, you mentioned those 14.5 sacks. 9.5 belong to Robert Quinn. He's been a revelation for the Cowboys. He's really been their star so far this season defensively. But DeMarcus Lawrence, for the moment, is the richest player in Dallas Cowboys history, and I think he's lived up to that contract. You know how it is. A lot of times those premier guys get double-teamed so often. But, I mean, you know, in terms of an extracurricular body, another person, I think it would be Michael. I mean, he's got 3 sacks with the Cowboys since the Cowboys traded for him in, you know, in the middle of the season. And outside of that, I mean, defense has been really disappointing. Now, this was a unit that really carried this team over the second half of last season. I think everybody remembers that Thursday night football game, which is about a year ago exactly, when they beat the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, the Cowboys were riding so high with Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch kind of announcing themselves as maybe at the time the best linebacking duo in the NFL. But Jalen Smith has had a bit of a down year after getting his own contract extension. Leighton Vander Esch has not been who he was as a rookie. In fact, he's hurt and he's already been ruled out for this game. And the Cowboys secondary, I mentioned it, you know, they have four interceptions. They get a lot of hub and pug due to who their coach is, Chris Richard, coming from the Seattle Seahawks. But, you know, everybody knew coming into the season that the secondary was going to be porous and, you know, that they don't have a real star. They were linked to Jamal Adams around the trade deadline. But outside of Robert Quinn and DeMarcus Lawrence, it's been a lot of, you know, a lot of average stuff. And that's why they've, you know, fallen in those holes, because defensively they seemingly, you know, they can get certain stops, but they can't get the stops at the right time.
You talked about some of the problems, the linebacking core, Vander Esch not going to be in there. The secondary has its struggles. If you were the Bears, what would be the point that you would attack in the Cowboys defense as far as is it going to be running the ball or passing the ball, intermediate, taking long shots? If the Bears were going to attack a part of this defense, where would they go?
Well, if I was the Bears, I would certainly focus on intermediate things. I think that's where, you know, Tariq Cohen can do a lot of damage. You know, with no Leighton Vander Esch in the game, Jalen Smith has really had trouble at times this season against, you know, running backs that are elusive and shifty and can juke and jive like Tariq can. I think, you know, the Bears have a lot of interesting skill players. I think this is kind of right up Cordarrelle Patterson's alley. I think, you know, if I wanted to attack a specific player, I would definitely look for Chidobe Awuzie, the Cowboys' other cornerback. You know, they had Byron Jones last year in his first year at the position, played an all-pro level, but Chidobe Awuzie, who's in his third season with the team, has really been a specific point of weakness for this team. And, you know, he's been getting attacked sort of week in and week out. I think he did a fine job on Kenny Galladay a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, most of the time, Chido has been, you know, left kind of chasing somebody. And so that's where I would look to really attack. But I also think, you know, Mr. Trubisky is certainly a guy that can run. And the Cowboys have had issues with quarterbacks like that. You know, everybody saw Josh Allen and what he was able to do to the Cowboys on the ground. But I would also throw out that Jeff Driskel kind of had his way running around the Cowboys when the Cowboys were in Detroit a couple of weeks ago. So I think the sneakiest, sort of most underrated element is Mitchell Trubisky's legs, especially since that's something he's been known to do time to time.
Before I throw you over to the chat room, I want to talk about special teams real quick. We always get a kick about talking about the other team's special teams. Who could be a game breaker, or who has been a consistent force on the special teams unit, be it a gunner, a returner, a kicker, a punter? Who stands out for the Cowboys? I know that you guys have had your kicking issues as well. Who stands out on the special teams unit?
You know, I hate to cop out and say nobody, but, I mean, you are talking about the 32nd ranked special teams unit in the NFL. I mean, you know, they've been very bad. I mean, they've been bad in all aspects. And that's why I think this game is so fascinating, because you do have such dynamic returners for the Bears. But I think even beyond that, I think even when the Cowboys are returning, they've had a lot of gaffes. I think everybody saw the way they handled that punt at the end of the game against the Minnesota Vikings, where Tavon Austin called for a fair catch. You know, it's things like that that they're just doing so badly. You mentioned kicking problems, and I understand that, you know, there's certainly a handful of those in Chicago as well. But Brett Maher, you know, he's played in 30 career games with the Dallas Cowboys. He's missed at least one kick of some kind in over half of them. You know, he's played in 12 games this season. He's missed a field goal in 7 of them. And so, I mean, the Cowboys are extremely unreliable. They did bring in kickers, for what it's worth, this week and tried a few out. But they're continuing to roll with Brett Maher. It certainly doesn't help that Dan Bailey is doing well for himself as a member of the Minnesota Vikings. But if I had to, you know, give it somebody, I would say C.J. Goodwin. You know, he's kind of a gunner. He's kind of a guy that's great at getting down the field when the Cowboys are punting or kicking. But, you know, I'm reaching deep in the barrel for that.
I appreciate the effort. Talking to RJ Ochoa from SB Nation's blog and the boys. Alyssa, how are the Barflies in the chat room behaving? Do they have any questions for RJ?
Yes, I have two questions for you. Hey, RJ, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. So I want to kind of get right down. Let's talk about Jerry Jones. Okay. So what do Dallas fans think of Jerry? Do they like him, or do they feel that he's part of the problem here?
Yeah, I think you get a lot of people who still sort of live with the cliches that Jerry's coaching the team and he's, you know, breathing over Jason Garrett's shoulder and he wants to make all the decisions. You know, none of those things are accurate. They're just sort of, you know, age-old myths and things like that. But I think that people now understand that Jerry Jones really wants to win. And, you know, he's a fantastic businessman on top of all that. But he really, more than anything, you know, wants to see the Cowboys, you know, win one more, at least before, you know, before Jerry is done with his time here. And so I think that people realize that, but I do think that Jerry is a point of frustration for a lot of people, and he's an easy target. You know, Jerry, I don't know how many owners in the NFL have weekly radio spots. Jerry appears on local radio twice a week, and he was on there today, and, you know, he comes out and he voices support for Jason Garrett. And, you know, while on one hand you can say, well, of course he's got to do that. That's his guy. It is frustrating given, you know, what people are seeing from the team. So I think that, you know, they have a love-hate relationship with Jerry Jones, but ultimately they realize that, you know, he is part of what they love about the team so much.
So the Cowboys paid Ezekiel Elliott, and they're going to have to pay Dak Prescott. What's the likelihood that Amari Cooper and or Byron Jones remain with the team beyond 2019?
Well, you know, I know it was reported nationally over the weekend that the Cowboys could lose both of them to free agency. I would be stunned if they lost both of them, just simply because, you know, the Cowboys traded a first round draft pick for Amari Cooper. You don't let a guy like that, you know, leave unless it's an utter disaster. That certainly hasn't been the case with Amari Cooper. There is an interesting wrinkle to the way the offseason of 2020 works under the current collective bargaining agreement. So if that were to change, obviously this detail would as well. But next offseason, the Cowboys, just like every NFL team, can utilize both the franchise and transition tags. I mean, you know, generally in every offseason, each team can only use one. And so while I certainly expect the Cowboys, if they don't get any long-term contract extension done before the deadline done with Dak Prescott, I do think they'll franchise tag him just to, you know, buy time and not let him get out the door. And I think they'll apply the transition tag to Amari Cooper. I think a lot of people, even before this year and Zeke got his deal and, you know, Jalen Smith got his deal and Lyle Collins got his deal, everybody kind of assumed that Byron Jones was the odd man out. A lot of people point to his lack of interceptions. He has two on his career. You know, the Cowboys have kind of, you know, shuffled him around, played him at safety, played him at cornerback. And, you know, while he's had moments of prominence, I think everybody, you know, if you've got to lose somebody, I think if you asked every Cowboys fan among that group, they would say that they prefer to lose Byron Jones over anybody.
And before we let you go, we got to get your prediction for the game. How do you see this playing out on Thursday?
You know, I will say I've got a really soft spot in my heart for the Bears. I love that organization. And I've just always been a fan in a different way, obviously. And for what it's worth, my wife and I just got a puppy and his name is Bear, if that helps. But, you know, I think looking at this game, I mean, I think this Bears defense is going to be great on Thursday night. I think the weather is going to play a factor, but I also think this Bears offense has struggled at times. And so I think this is going to be a low-scoring, ugly, boring game. And, you know, I don't know, you know, what the temperature is with Bears fans and Matt Nagy and things like that, but even if the Cowboys won this game, nobody is going to sort of shift in terms of positivity towards Jason Garrett just because the NFC East is so bad. But I'm thinking the Cowboys win this game something like 13-10. And, you know, that maybe they're trailing 3-0, whatever late in the game, and they finally get their first touchdown. It's just a, you know, sort of sludge sort of drive that Zeke powers through. But I think they win just barely, no pun intended. And you know, everybody stays mad and, you know, upset for another week and a half.
RJ, thank you for being so kind by saying that the Bears offense has struggled at points throughout the season and not just is a complete dumpster fire. But I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Before we let you go, can you tell our listeners where they can find your work and interact with you on social media?
Sure. We're at bloggingtheboys.com, SB Nation's home for Dallas Cowboys coverage. And so you can find us there. You can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You know, we have a YouTube channel, so you can subscribe to all of our properties and get a ton of different content in all those avenues. I'm on Twitter and Instagram personally at RJ Ochoa. You know, as Twitter is, it kind of exists as a hub for everything I do specifically. And that's about it. So, you know, I wish you guys a great and a happy holiday season. But, you know, just a little bit of a bummer evening this Thursday night.
All right, RJ Ochoa from SB Nation's Blog of the Boys. RJ, thank you so much for being on. Happy post-Thanksgiving to you. Happy holidays to you.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
So, John, that music signifies one thing. It's time for the second half of our B55 questions. And I don't know about you, but I'm thankful we didn't get the kiss of death this week.
Well, yeah, that was nice. But he was such a nice guy that I feel like he felt bad for picking the Cowboys when in reality he probably thinks they're going to win by 2 touchdowns.
So that was sweet of him just to say that. I'll take a low-scoring game, loss of 3. So we're going to get to our next set of questions here, John.
Let's do it.
So based on what RJ just shared, how do you think the Bears match up against the Cowboys? What should Matt Nagy and his coaching staff try to exploit, and where could they be in trouble? 55 seconds, anytime.
Well, I'm sorry if listeners of this show think I've turned cynical, but I don't love this matchup. Yeah, the Cowboys are underperforming this year, but have you watched the 2019 Chicago Bears? The Dallas offense is ranked high in a number of categories. 6th in total points, 1st in yards per game, 7th in rushing yards, 1st in passing yards. The Bears defense is going to have to put up a stellar performance, and the secondary is pretty banged up. The Bears offense will have to score more than 20 points to win this game, and it's not like the Dallas defense is terrible. They're right behind the Bears in yards allowed per game. They're 9th in points allowed per game at 19.7. The Bears are 4th at 17.3, just for comparison's sake. So let's get real elementary with this. The Bears, good defense. An offense that looks pretty good against awful teams and looks awful against pretty good teams. The Cowboys, great offense, pretty average defense, but not terrible. On its face, I don't like it. What I do like, it's a Thursday game at home. I know both teams played last Thursday, but it can still throw a road team off. It's going to be cold. Let's hope that tenses up some of the Cowboys players.
I know that after that Thanksgiving game, it seemed like this team was in a free fall. And it was just the one thing, I'm just nervous that this is, sometimes you saw it with the Vikings earlier this season after they had that loss and that rough week, that's when they put it together, and that's my fear, this week, on Thursday. But, the cold and the weather, that might be, an advantage. Obviously, we saw what it did with the Rams last year.
It's going to be, I think it will play into effect here, but is it going to make up for any other deficiencies that are going to be shown on the field? We'll have to see.
And obviously, Prince Amukamara's status is in question here. He has a hamstring injury. He hasn't practiced all week, so we could be looking at Kevin Tolliver, starting there opposite Kyle Fuller. Yeah. How do you think that this could impact the defense?
I don't necessarily love that. A lot of Kevin Tolliver, he'll probably get a lot of Michael Gallup. You'll probably see Buster Screen taking Randall Cobb in the slot and then Fuller on Cooper. That's kind of scary because it thinks some things are unproven there, and the way that the Cowboys like to toss the ball around, that's not great. So I know a lot of people are taking shots at Amukamara, but he's played solid at times. So I would prefer to have him in there against a guy like Gallup, but we'll see. I don't like the fact that he could be hampered by a hamstring injury or not play at all.
Yeah, give me Amukamara over Tolliver any day.
Yeah.
So, we've been critical of the development of Anthony Miller this year, but against the Lions, he had, by his own account, one of the worst halves of football since he turned pro. But then we saw that second half. It was just outstanding. Do you think that this young guy is starting to finally turn a corner? 55 seconds, go.
I think that you look at Anthony Miller, and he's showing some flashes of what the Bears thought he could be. Now, I know that I've been critical of Anthony Miller at times, but let's look over the last 3 games for Anthony Miller. You're going to see a noticeable progression. Against the Rams, 6 catches for 54 yards. Against the Giants, 6 catches for 77 yards. Against the Lions, 9 catches for 140 yards. You want to know what a big difference is in those 3 weeks? Up to that point, Miller was averaging 3.3 targets per game through 9 games. The last 3 weeks, he's averaging 11 targets per game. So who would have thought that more usage could potentially mean more production? If he's more involved in this offense on the field, if he's on the field more, he can build up a little bit of a rhythm, build up that consistency. Look, I know he still doesn't have a touchdown, but he is making strides. He has the physical tools to be a game breaker. Like I said earlier in the show, he really thrived in that fast-paced final drive.
And, this was the Anthony Miller that we were expecting to see from the beginning of the season. The offseason he was talking about how, his shoulder got healthy. He finally had 2 healthy arms. And then, this last few weeks, we've seen that rapport with Trubisky. It's, starting to develop. They're getting him the ball more often now. Taylor Gabriel being out, a big reason for that as well. Coming off that career game, I'm really excited to see, what he can do the rest of this year and moving forward.
Well, yeah, it's the end of the season is going to speak volumes for a lot of guys here.
Absolutely. And so keeping with the wide receivers, against the Lions, Javon Wims got the most targets of his NFL career with 6, and he caught 5 passes. He'll probably see some additional work Thursday, as it looks like Taylor Gabriel will remains in concussion protocol, and it looks like, you know, that he will not play, given this is his second this season. So are you down with the Javon Wims era starting now, or, you know, what's up?
I certainly am. I want to see Wims on the field. I want to see Riley Ridley on the field doing more than just running into his position late and then doing nothing and trotting off. Look, I like Taylor Gabriel a lot. He's an explosive player that can make big plays. But the Bears could maybe have a decision make at the end of the year. Gabriel has a cap hit of $6.5 million next year and $7.5 million in 2021. They can get out of his contract with minimal damage after this year. So now would be a good time to see if Wims could be a viable option consistently in this offense. And the same could be said for Riley Ridley. There's no guarantee Anthony Miller's that guy either. That's why I want to see him, Wims, and Ridley getting playing time. I know that isn't exactly viable with Allen Robinson demanding a pretty big share of the throws as well. But if the Bears are eventually eliminated from playoff contention, I want to see Wims in a much bigger role on this offense. And I could say the same for Riley Ridley and Anthony Miller as well. Now is the time to see what you got, because you're going to have some decisions to make in the offseason.
I mean, I've been on the Javon Wims hype train since training camp, and I've just, like, been waiting for him to finally get some of these opportunities, because when he does get the opportunities, he certainly makes the most of this, and he kind of adds this new wrinkle to the offense. So, you know, obviously with Gabriel, it looks like he's going to be out. I mean, I want to see Wims. I want to see Ridley. Let's get these young guys some reps.
Yeah, now's the time. I mean, just see what you got. It's not like, oh, no, we're going to mess up the rhythm of the offense. Come on.
There is no rhythm.
Exactly.
So going over to the defense, so the team began the Lions game by giving up 2 touchdowns to David Blau. Like, can you believe it? To a third-string quarterback. So what were those breakdowns all about, and how concerned are you about this defense facing Dak and the Cowboys, especially with Mara possibly out? 55 seconds.
Well, I didn't love seeing the secondary get lit up like a Christmas tree against a guy that I think was traded to Detroit in exchange for a washing machine. I'm kidding. David Blau has accomplished more in a week than I have in my whole life. He was an academic all Big Ten player at Purdue. David Blau truthers, relax. I'm not taking too many shots at your guy. But the defense eventually did settle down. They only allowed 3 points in the second half. Didn't allow any points in the second quarter after, you know, giving up 2 touchdowns in the first. But Dak Prescott is slightly better than David Blau, wouldn't you say? Ezekiel Elliott is slightly better than Bo Scarborough, wouldn't you say? Amari Cooper is an incredible talent. I don't know if Dallas is going to have a lot of offensive lulls throughout this game. And the problem is, the Bears defense won't just have to contain the Cowboys offense. They're going to have to actually make some plays to help out their own offense. And that is a very tall order for a defense that's missing a lot of key pieces. I mean, Hicks still isn't going to be in there. Trevathan's not going to be in there. Amukamara may not play at all in this game. So, I mean, the Bears defense is under a lot of pressure, not just to contain this high-powered offense, but to actually make plays to help out their offense. So it's going to be interesting to see.
You know, the Bears defense, I mean, they're allowing the 4 fewest points per game in the league. The other 4 teams in the top 5, they're all playoff contenders.
Oh, yeah.
So let's not forget that this defense is capable of that. I mean, look, I know they held Aaron Rodgers to 10 points. I know that was the first game with Matt LaFleur, but, you know, this defense, even with all, you know, with Akeem Hicks being out and Danny Trevathan and, you know, Prince possibly being out, you know, it's going to be difficult, you know, especially with those key players missing, but this defense does have the ability to make those plays, and they're going to need to do it against the Cowboys.
Well, yeah, we've seen them do that all year. I'm not worried about them holding the Cowboys to a small number of points. I think they can do that. The problem is, will the Bears offense going to be able to do that? Now, if everyone's going to base that off of the last 2 weeks, yeah, they can score points against the Giants and the Lions. But when they actually go against an average defense, are they going to be able to score enough points? We've seen the Bears defense hold opponents to low points all year. A lot of those games, they lost. So we're going to have to see if the offense can get it done, or if the defense really does have to make plays.
I think we know the answer to that question, but let's hope that we're wrong.
Right.
So I got a couple questions from the chat room for you, John.
All right.
So the Cowboys, they have some talented pass rushers up front there on their roster, but they've struggled in coverage a bit. Do you think that the Bears could exploit that weakness and go with five wide to possibly help their offensive line?
Oh, five wide. Maybe. I don't know if we're going to five wide. I would like to see them try to spread things out a little bit. I'm not saying that Trubisky needs to throw the ball 55 times, but I like what they did on that final drive against Detroit. Maybe an up-paced offense is what they need to do. Trubisky doesn't have time to really break things down and think about it and, you know, just overthink and, you know, collapse on himself. Let him just go out there and play and sling it a little bit and see if that's effective, because like I said before early in the show, whatever they were doing before, it wasn't working. So maybe it's you roll him out a little bit. Hell, would you let the kid run a little bit? Although when he did run, he almost ran away from the first down. I don't know if everybody remembers that play where he had the first down, and it's almost like the first down line was made of lava. So he kind of just bounced off of that. But I think you roll him out, you let him run around a little bit, let the wide receivers, you know, roam a little bit and see what you got. I'd like to see a little more of that.
I mean, this offense hasn't worked the entire season until that Lions game. And I know they were playing the Lions, but, you know, Nagy has to look at, you know, what worked in that game, that fast tempo, you know, rolling Trubisky out, you know, running the football. Please let's not have another seven run game. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how Nagy responds. Is he going to go back to being his stubborn self and, you know, try to force things, or is he going to go with what's working?
Well, I mean, we've seen a stubborn mentality from the Bears in the past year, so we'll probably continue to try to jam that square peg into a round hole for a while.
That's true. And I got one more question from the chat room for you. So do you think that the Bears cornerbacks can cover the Cowboys receivers, especially with it looking like it's going to be Tolliver in there for Mukamara?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't, like I said, I don't love the deep. I don't love the matchup to begin with, because I think the Cowboys, they're leading the league in passing yards. Dak's going to be able to throw the ball around, and there's going to be some creases for him to throw the ball with if the secondary's banged up, especially if they're getting no pass rush. If Khalil Mack's getting double, triple teamed, and Leonard Floyd doesn't show up, Leonard Floyd doesn't have a very good game, then if Dak has a couple minutes to throw the ball like it seems like he might, then yeah, they're going to be able to pick apart the secondary. A lot of this will come down to whether or not they can get any kind of a push from their four-man front or just without having to blitz. So a lot of that will be dependent on up front as much as it is the secondary.
And I'm really not expecting to see Leonard Floyd because, you know, it's he's not playing the Packers.
We haven't,
you know,
yeah, but we haven't yet.
Maybe in a couple weeks.
Yeah, and against the Packers, he'll probably show up.
So I got one final question for you. So, obviously, I'm assuming you watched the Monday night game last night. So, now that the Vikings are 8-4 and the NFC East probably is not going to have a wild card team, what do you think, and I want you, John, to try to put on your optimistic hat here, okay? Okay, a little bit.
Yeah,
So what do you think, and don't laugh when I ask this, what do you think the Bears' chances are of making the playoffs? The clock is off, my friend.
Listen, I could sit here and go through all of the Matt Damon Goodwill Hunting scenarios in which the Bears will qualify for the playoffs, but I'm not going to do that. I was happy the Vikings lost, and I'll be cheering for the Seahawks again this week when they play the Rams. But this is all for naught if the Bears can't start beating actual competition. If they lose to Dallas, I'm sure I'll see plenty of people drawing up how they can make the playoffs at 9-7, which is technically possible. But I don't care about probabilities at this point. This team has to show that it can beat other good teams. If they beat the Cowboys this week and the Green Bay game can actually mean something, then we can have a discussion about the Bears' outside chance and making the playoffs, but I'm going to leave it at that. Okay, every week I give you my prediction to the game, and just like the Bears, I am incredibly average. This week basically is the season, if you ask me. The Bears have an outside shot with the Vikings losing, but it all means nothing if the Bears don't handle their own business. I like that the Bears are at home. It's going to be night and cold and all that happy stuff. If the Bears win this game, I will have a little more confidence, but like I said before numerous times throughout this show, I don't love the matchup. I think the Bears actually fall in this one 24-16. I want to thank RJ Ochoa from SB Nation's Blogging the Boys for being our guest tonight. Remember to follow me on Twitter at JD Buffone, and make sure you are following the Barroom on Twitter at Bears Barroom, and visit the Facebook page. Alyssa, tell our listeners where they can find your work and contact you on social media.
You can find my work over at bearswire.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Alyssa Barbieri. I also want to tell those listening to us live on Mixler.com to stick around. John and I will be joined by Aldo Gandia, and we'll talk a little more Bears. Additionally, Fantasy Football Goon and the Shy Fans in the Stands is on hiatus this week as Joey Two Scoops is on his honeymoon with his new bride, Catherine Two Scoops. Tomorrow here on Mixler, Vegas scores an odd advantage with Mike North moves to a new time, noon central. The world champion handicapper Mike North will have three free picks for you to bet on, and he's on a winning streak. Those shows, like all of our live shows, are available on podcast format, so make sure you subscribe to the Bears Barroom Radio Network.
That's right, and don't forget to, I lost my cue there, don't forget to sign up on our Mixler.com channel for email updates on all of our live shows. We'd love to have you in the chat room. It's all absolutely free to sign up for. We hope you join us live and interact. And if you listen to the podcast version of this show, please leave us a review. That helps us out immensely. But that will do it for us this week. For Alyssa Barbieri, Aldo Gandia, I'm John Buffone. We'll see you next week.
Another great show, John and Alyssa. You guys are, I don't know, what kind of comparison would I have of great sports announcing duos that I can compare you to?
Madden and Summerall.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. I was going to say we're not like the Bears.
Exactly.
The key to doing a good show is content.
Oh, my gosh. Now, I got to ask you guys some questions. Cowboys-Bears, do you think that's a rivalry? What's your kind of history of watching these two teams play? Any memorable games? Any inborn hostility towards those teams? John, let's start with you.
me personally, not really. I do have hatred for a few teams. Cowboys aren't necessarily one of them. I know that nationally they always used to rub people the wrong way, because I think that, you know, everyone talks about the Patriots being America's team now, and I think that's only true if because nationally I think the Patriots are hated, and I think the Cowboys were nationally hated in the 90s and maybe even in the early 2000s, but I don't know if that's really necessarily the case anymore. I don't hate the Cowboys. I really want to beat them, and I'll probably be pissed off at them if they beat the Bears, but I can't think of any deep-rooted hatred I have for anybody in Dallas.
What about you, Alyssa?
I hate the Cowboys.
I like that.
I mean, I feel like, I mean, the Packers, I hate them obviously the most, you know, and the Cowboys are their number two. I just like learned it growing up, but also like my uncle's a Cowboys fan, so you know, I actually haven't watched any games with him. I'm actually afraid to, because he's way worse than me. But like, I remember watching, do you remember that horrible Thanksgiving game when they wore the orange jerseys? I'm trying to think what year that was, but it was just,
yeah, let me see.
Absolutely dreadful. I was just like, I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Like, let me go eat some more turkey here. And then obviously, you know, I don't know. I don't like them. My mom's a Giants fan, so I root against them too on her behalf, you know. So I'm just, yeah, not a big Cowboys fan at all.
Yeah, I grew up, you know, hating the Cowboys just because they were America's team and they were always achieving success. And as a child, they would come into Soldier Field and beat the crap out of the Bears and Tom Landry with the hat and all that stuff. And then, you know, as McBierman points out in the chat room, 1985 season, the Bears just absolutely crushed the Cowboys down in Dallas, 44-0. And that's when everybody, not only in Chicago, but throughout the nation knew, okay, these Bears are Super Bowl bound. And so that's one of my greatest memories in all of sports, that along with seeing Michael Jordan win the 6 titles, that with the Blackhawks winning 3 titles in the beginning of this season, the Cubs, Cubs broke my heart in 69. I've never been able to get over it, even when they won the World Series 40 years later, whatever it was. But one of my greatest memories is that Bears-Cowboys game, and just loving that feeling of finally slaying the Giant. So sweet. Did you guys ever experience that, like with a Bears win, that you just felt so satisfied?
Probably the game against the Cardinals. I think that was a Monday night game in 06, where it's just like the last time that I saw the Bears really just grasp a win from the depth, the jaws of defeat, the Dennis Green game. that's the only one I can really think of where I was watching it. I was actually in my freshman year of college at the time. And I remember my friends I was watching it with were just like, oh, this is your team, huh? Because I just met them that semester. They're like, oh, so this is the team you root for and you love so much. And I'm like, son of a bitch. So you know, they turned around. I was like, okay, I got a little swagger back. I like that.
What about you? What about you, Alyssa?
Well, anytime the Bears happen to beat the Packers is always a memorable one.
Yes.
But I'm kind of thinking back to that same season and the divisional round against the Seahawks when Robbie Gould kicked that game-winning field goal because they won a playoff game. And just, like, I felt pure elation, like, just, like, absolutely. And also couldn't believe what the hell was happening, too, at the same time.
You know, I got to tell you guys that I have typically every year I go back and watch the Bears game a second time to study it. Not necessarily the All 22 that's become fashionable in the last few years since NFL Game Pass has made that available. But I just, you know, watch the broadcast feed a second time. And this season, because of my frustration with the Bears, I haven't done it as religiously as I've done in the past. So, you know, after the win against the Lions, I did it, and I was so impressed with a number of things, but also so frustrated by a number of things that this team continues to do, starting with the coaching staff and then going on to Mitch. You know, there's that one play that Troy Aikman outlined on his Telestrator where Mitch fails to see a wide open Anthony Miller running a slant out to the sideline and instead goes down under, and Trubisky is just so focused on getting it out to the flat that he never sees Anthony Miller totally unguarded with what would have been, you know, an explosive play, 20 plus yards and so forth. Do you guys, you know, I guess my question is, do you guys get as frustrated as I do at all of these missed opportunities by this team? And do you have any hope at all, particularly with Mitch Trubisky, that he's ever going to develop the skills to look downfield? Because that's what makes great quarterbacks, is to keep their eyes downfield and they spot that guy, that open guy, and they're not so focused on the first read or not afraid of the pass rush to step into throws and stuff. Any confidence at all that Trubisky is going to get there?
From what I've seen, no. I mean, it's because you see him just zoom in on a guy, and basically he knows where he's going to throw the ball, and he knows where the ball's going before the ball's even snapped. And when you look at it in slow motion, it's even more evident that he knows where the ball's going. So can you teach that to you know look off of a guy and look to the other guy? I don't know. Can you go through your progressions, teach to scan the field? I don't know. It's maybe not. Maybe this isn't the offense for him. I mean, he is a skilled guy, but maybe this isn't the right fit for him.
Yeah, I want him to succeed, but do I think so?
Yeah, everybody wants that.
Yeah,
I mean, right.
I said this guy could be. This guy could be Alex Smith at one point. I put that was a ceiling, which I thought was going to be good. That's a good ceiling, I thought, for this guy. But I don't see that anymore.
No, I don't. And like you said, I don't think that this offense – I mean, Nagy's certainly not doing him any favors here. He's just playing scared all the time. And RJ talked a little bit about, you know, how Dak has been, you know, coached to be more aggressive. You know, like, where's that – like, stop, like, teaching – the micromanaging him – he's playing scared. Like you said, when he ran backwards and he had the first down, I know maybe it's, you know, he's playing with a hip injury and a shoulder injury that could have factored into it, but it just feels like he's just playing scared. And the first time, you know, that he wasn't, you know, was obviously that game, you know, and mostly in the second half.
Yeah.
And is it possible that he's overwhelmed? In the second year of this offense, there's just too much being thrown at him. And that's very possible, because now maybe the playbook's completely opened up, and that's just hell. Nagy's playbook could be the Encyclopedia Britannica for all we know. It probably is pretty complex.
I probably cut that in half, you know, against the Lions. You know, just scale it back. But you you know, how long are you gonna do that? And, you know, keep saying, oh, you know, it's gonna take time. I mean, this is year three. You know, next year, you know, he'll still be on the roster. Year four, you're gonna keep making excuses for him. Eventually, you know, he's gonna have to get it. But I don't think he is here in Chicago.
Yeah, I've been making fun of Matt Nagy on Twitter when he's holding that gigantic Denny-sized menu, play calling chart, and the cameras always catch him looking down on that, and I get frustrated by that because I look at the head coach as a little bit more as a CEO and as opposed to being the manager of something. And I know that there are very successful head coaches who call plays either on offense and defense, but I do prefer more of the Bill Belichick style where he's overseeing everything and has his imprint on everything. And right now, Matt Nagy just frustrates the hell out of me because his specialty is the offense, and clearly the offense is the biggest problem with this team, and clearly that play calling sheet is way too big for Mitch Trubisky. You know, like Alyssa said, that thing can be torn, you know, up, torn to smithereens and get it like a little postage size stamp of size of that.
Give him a Denny's menu.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you throw in, you got Moon Over Miami and the Grand Slam. Those are the classics to go with it.
Exactly. That's it. And let Mitch run a little bit more. You know, some people in the chat room were saying maybe he's not running because of the shoulder or something like that. Well, if he's not 100% or close to it and not willing to take some hits on that shoulder, then he shouldn't be out there. Maybe it should be Chase. Because part of what makes Mitch so effective is tucking the ball and running when he's gone through that first and second read, because he's never going to get to the third read. Let's face it.
No, we're happy if he gets to the second read.
And, really?
And I think it comes down to, once again, we're seeing a lack of adapting, maybe from the coaching staff, to say, this is the system that's going to work. This is the system that got us to the playoffs last year. This is what it's going to be, hell or high water. I don't care what the personnel is. We're running this. And we've talked about this before. There's two different mentalities to coaches, where you adapt to your personnel or you have the tried and true method, and it doesn't matter who's in there. They're going to play that position. They're going to do this assignment, and it's going to work. But the problem is this isn't working, and we're seeing kind of a lack of adaptation at that point.
Yeah.
I feel like Matt Nagy was so obsessed this offseason to insist that, you know, Trubisky was, you know, football 202, right? Like, so he just, like, he wanted him to be, right? But we can agree, he's nowhere near that.
Yeah.
Chubbs 82 in the chat room says, I don't think the play calling sheet is too big for Mitch. I think Matt Nagy micromanages him, and I think he tells him where to throw it and who to throw it to and who's going to be open, and when he's wrong, he doesn't take any responsibility, the guy can, you know, ran the wrong routes. Yeah, Matt Nagy has a tendency of, you know, letting the media know Anthony Miller ran the wrong route. And so it's, I do think there's some truth to what Chubbs is saying, that it's like Matt Nagy, who is a failed NFL quarterback, is living vicariously through Mitch. And so he overcoaches him, over micromanages him. You know, the worst thing I think that happened in training camp is the one day that I was out there and Trubisky had a so-so, if that, day. And then here's Matt Nagy after practice throwing dimes 40 yards downfield to his receivers. And he probably had no idea that he was showing up as quarterback, but that's exactly what he was doing. And so that to me kind of stuck into my mind that, you know, maybe Matt Nagy wants to be the NFL quarterback and not a true head coach. What do you guys think about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's some truth to that, where he feels like he's playing a game of Madden where he can kind of control every person on the field. Yeah. He's the one making the reads, and he's the one who knows it's going to be open, and he's going to be the one to deciding where the ball's going to go. And maybe you need to rein off a little bit there. Maybe you need to say, hey, let my players see what's going on in the field, and I don't need to have a controller in my hand. So there could be some truth to that, and we'll see if he backs off on that later on. But I think there definitely is some merit to that argument.
When you saw him back off a little, I mean, we'd like to assume he backed off a little bit, you in that Lions game, because, you know, Mitch was just going out there and just, you know, reacting. It didn't look like he's overthinking. Oh, I'm supposed to throw the ball here. Oh, he's not, you know, where am I going? It felt like, you know, Nagy finally just let him, you know, ball out. So just step back or maybe the headset. Let's do that again every week.
You're absolutely right, Alyssa. It was the perfect game. Hopefully Nagy got it after that game. He runs the hurry up offense so much better. He improvises so much better when he's thinking. He's not performing at his peak. Who was it just in the chat room that said, you know, I don't think that Mitch is that bright of a guy. And that might be correct. You know, he's got to read leadership books on how to become a leader. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
nothing makes you a better leader than someone telling you how to be a leader. So
exactly. And then McBearman had an interesting comment in the chat room. He says Chase would get killed behind that offensive line. Now, but I got to tell you, when I went back and watched the game, I was really impressed with the offensive line play on Thanksgiving, and I thought maybe this is a turning point for this team, because let's face it, it seems like the Bears' offensive line always starts out slow, and maybe what happened this year is that they started out slow for 10 games, and so they're finally getting it.
Three quarters of the season is slow, and then they start to gel.
Hey, their season starts, you know, in the fourth quarter.
That's right.
Yeah, they're a hell of a third quarter scoring team, from what I understand. So.
T-Mitten says, hey, don't blast them for reading books. Hey, come to my house, T-Mittens, and you will see. I got a library of literally 500 books, and probably 25 of them are leadership books that I read when I was in corporate America. But I did not tell people, my employees, well, I read this in chapter 14 of Excellence at the Workplace. You know, you just keep that to yourself, and you employ it into your day-to-day work habits, and you just don't advertise that you're studying to be a leader. Just be you. Mitch, we want you to be that guy that was in college and was tweeting out nonsense about, you know, kissing this and kissing that. Just be that guy. Be one of the guys.
Part of reading a book is not having to reference back and saying where you got your information. You just kind of employ it into your everyday life.
Right.
You don't say, well, according to this particular leadership book, I should be mad at you right now, and I should chew you out to establish my dominance. Now, who the hell's going to take that seriously? So, I mean, maybe, I mean, good for him for trying to get better and doing whatever you can to, you know, have better attributes, but don't tell people about it.
Yeah.
Maybe he wanted to just let, you know, Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy know that he was doing his homework like a good boy.
Yeah, right. I read that book.
Well, yeah, it's very possible that Nagy checks everybody's homework every possible day. Another micromanaging system.
Well, I remember when Phil Jackson was coaching the Chicago Bulls, and the one thing that he did every year on that long West Coast road trip where they were away from Chicago for almost 2 weeks, is he would pick out a book for every player to read, kind of based on their personality. He spent some time at the bookstore picking out what he thought was the appropriate book and so forth. Now, 80% of the players...
Jordan, like, The Art of War or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, 80% of the players says, yeah, I don't read it. I didn't read it. Or, you know, I kind of just thumbed through it. But 20% of players, like Jordan, read a couple of books. And B.J. Armstrong, who was a voracious reader, read all of the books that Phil Jackson gave him. But again, you know, this isn't for, you know, for public, you know, I read this book and now I know how to lead the team. That just doesn't work. But I do agree with what Alyssa and you, John, said earlier, that everybody does kind of like Mitch. He is a really nice guy. And you know, I really do hope that, not just for the franchise's sake, but for him, that I really do hope that he turns things around these last four games, and he gives us hope that maybe for 2020 he is the quarterback of the Chicago Bears.
Now, he is a guy you root for. I want to see him do well, and I know I was cautiously optimistic through most of his career. I was pretty excited about this year to see what the third year, second year in this offense jump was going to be. And when it didn't happen, it was just very deflating. Now there are, you know, there's different circumstances of why you can say that didn't happen, but it's almost just like people aren't. I mean, there are people that hate on Trubisky, but I think a lot of people are just like, damn, dude, I want you to do well. Why aren't you doing well? Everyone wants him to play well. And he says it hasn't lived up to that yet.
Mm. I feel like going back to that the first game, like, you know, there isn't like even like the entire offseason, like, you know, he was confident, you know, he was feeling good. He was eating up Nagy's words, you know, about how he's, you know, embracing this football 202. And then that Packers game happened. And like the post game presser, and like you just saw, like it washed away.
Yeah.
And you know, like the seasons, it's been about, you know, getting that confidence. And I know it's taken a very long time, but you know, it's good to see in the way that his teammates, you know, rally around him. That Club Dub video, watching how, you know, they surrounded him in the locker room. Like, you know, you want to root for him. He's a good guy. You know, but like you said, you know, I'd love to see him turn it around in these final four games. You know, but. Yeah, we'll see.
Ed in the chat room says, Mitch is the guy you want to him to take your sister out. He isn't going to make a move, and she'll be home by 9 o'clock.
Yes.
And Rel asks a really good question. So are leaders born or are leaders made? What do you think, John?
Ooh, wow. I didn't know we were going to get super philosophical here. Let me dig into my existentialism classes with Kierkegaard. I think that you can have a little bit of both. I think, you know,
you can get
leadership skills through experiences, through what you've gone through and how you build resiliency and how you lead people through your mistakes and things like that. Now, you know, there are some people that are, you know, I'm not to steal a Maybelline commercial here, but some people are just born with it. And, you know, you have it, you know how to be around people, you know how to conduct yourselves around people, and you just have that aura around you, which people respect and they want to follow you. Now, there's other people that have to maybe polish that up a little bit. So I didn't know that we were going to get real into this, but I think that there's different personalities can have two different kind of leaderships.
Yeah. I don't know. I think
completely
that,
agree. I think it's both.
Yeah. You think it's both?
Yeah. A little bit of both. Cause I mean, like you learn through experience, you know, and reading books that you should not publicly, you know, address.
Right.
You know, like, you know, and like John was saying, you like, you know, sometimes, you know, some people, they just have like a certain, you know, aura, charisma about them, and you kind of know that they have it.
Right.
So like, I definitely feel like it's a little bit of both, because you're always learning, constantly learning, you know, through your experiences.
Right. I do think,
yeah, that, I mean,
I was just going to say, I do think that certain people are born with that leadership gene, but they still have to learn how to kind of perfect that skill. It's not like, you know, you're a baby and you're organizing protests. And as you grow older, you kind of learn to perfect those inherent skills. And then there are some people who just don't have any leadership traits whatsoever, but for some reason or not, they're kind of forced into that situation, and they learn how to become at least a sufficient leader.
I live my life by what Socrates says: the only real knowledge is knowing that you know nothing. And that's how I'm living my life. That's how I conduct this show.
I think that's a good way to close out this episode of Before 55.
What the hell is the point of this show again? We're talking about football, or what?
We wound up at Socrates, so I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's how I'm going to go out.
All right, I want to thank. Listen, once again, John, we've got more people in for the post game. 21 listeners. They don't want to go home. You want to pull the plug, or should we stick around and talk a little more?
I got a couple minutes, and then I got another engagement to get to. I know I'm not trying to pull that kind of card, but I'm still on. I don't want to say I'm on the clock, because if anybody that I work with is listening to this, I don't want them to know that. But take care of some other stuff for another job at some point.
No problem. Listen, why don't you have the final words, John? It's your show, and then we'll close things out.
There's really nothing to close out with other than saying I like the fact that we added this little like auxiliary chat after the show. It gives us a chance to really just kind of hang out. Sometimes I forget that we are recording, and then this is actually going to go out and people are going to listen to it. But that's part of the charm of it, where you kind of just get to BS with your friends about your favorite thing. Even if people don't think it, the Bears are my favorite thing in the world, and I want them to win, and I want them to always win. So that's, even if I seem cynical, that's coming from a place in which I want this team to be the very best that it can. So I'll leave it at that.
There you go. Alyssa, any final words?
Nicely. I mean, John, like, kind of killed it there. Can I go back to the Socrates quote?
I revert back to Socrates.
All right, you two. Great job again. Everyone in the chat room is saying, please, please, I have nowhere else to go. Stay on. find something to do. Rewatch that game. Chubbs, yeah, 82
break
says,
down the film.
Yeah, go ahead and watch that nine play 90 yard scoring drive.
There you go.
You're ready for Thursday.
Chubbs 82 says, I still love you, John.
Oh, I love you, Chubbs. It's all in good fun, buddy.
All right. Take care, everybody. We'll see you soon.